Do you like wrestling trivia? Then check out the 5-Star Match Game, the pro wrestling quiz show. I'm Joe Gagne, and every episode, I grill 3 contestants with 5 rounds of power-packed wrestling trivia. We have over 30 evergreen episodes in the archives covering WWE, AEW, Japan, Mexico, and much, 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 much more. Play along at home and check it out today.
This podcast is a member of the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network. Visit voicesofwrestling.com to hear the rest of our great podcasts, as well as show reviews, columns, opinions, and updates across the world of wrestling.
Welcome back, everyone, to the Gentlemen's Wrestling Podcast. I'm your host, as always, Jesse Collings. And joining me here today, we have not one, but 2 first-time guests to the Gentlemen's Wrestling Podcast. To my left, I don't know if that's how people will see it, but at least to my left, we have Danny over. She is the owner of BlackGirlWrestling.com. Danny, welcome to the show. How are you doing?
I am doing great. I think it's really funny that it is very much a girl takeover on Gentlemen's Wrestling Podcast. But
I get questions about the title and stuff like that. I'm like, I'm just gonna roll with the Gentlemen's Wrestling Podcast. It is not a gender inclusive title.
You live your truth. Mine isn't either.
Yeah,
it's okay.
and joining us as well is Lyric Swinton. Lyric is the host of the Mats and Graps podcast. And Lyric, welcome to the show.
Hello, happy to be here.
Great, and the reason both of you are here today is because I wanted to have a discussion, kind of talking about where we are in terms of representation in pro wrestling, especially in the Black community. As I was saying off air before we started, I think this is kind of an interesting point for a lot of different aspects for Black representation in pro wrestling. We are seeing Swerve Strickland. Obviously, he became the first AEW men's world champion of African-American descent just last weekend. We are seeing, you know, Mercedes Moné just jump to AEW. Mercedes Moné is, I would say, is probably the highest paid Black wrestler in the world. The only one who I think might be close might be Bobby Lashley, but we're seeing her make kind of jump into like a new tax bracket, open up a new possibility for Black women in the pro wrestling industry. And we're also seeing some changes in WWE. Obviously, Vince McMahon officially is no longer in really any creative capacity in the company. Does that change the way different kind of Black talents get represented and things like that? I think we're at a really interesting point. And I wanted to have you both on kind of just talk about that. And I guess my first kind of question is kind of, when Swerve wins the AEW World Championship last weekend, and the announcer said during the match, you know, Swerve would become the first African-American AEW World Champion. They didn't like build the entire match around that storyline. They didn't really hype it up a ton in like video packages or anything like that. But it definitely was a major note. It's something that Swerve had mentioned in passing before, but I'm curious to know kind of what were your reactions to Swerve winning the world title and kind of becoming the first Black AEW men's world champion?
You can go first because you were there.
I was there. And in just a personal moment for me, you know, sort of taking myself out of the greater context of what everybody else was feeling, in that moment, I was incredibly excited. My sisters were also there. And we all shared this feeling. I don't know if Lyric can sort of correct me if I'm wrong, but I think a lot of times when I see Black wrestlers get their due, especially considering the way that the industry has operated for so long and continues to operate, it just hits different. It does feel particularly personal sometimes. Now, all of that sort of comes in with everything that happened after and everyone's opinions and this, that, and the third. But I'm not going to sit up here and lie. In that moment, I was over the moon. I was overjoyed. it did mean something to me. It absolutely did.
Yeah, I would just reiterate that. I've been a wrestling fan since second grade. I'm going on 18 years this year, and I can name on both of my hands and not use all the fingers how many times a moment like this has happened. And I actually appreciated that it was mentioned, but it wasn't the framing of the entire title win, because then people always want to say you're a diversity hire, you're just this token, this, or you. I appreciate how it was set up. And it is a big deal, and it is huge. And I think it's not just the championship. We've seen people win championships, but it was the full package of a company rallying around a Black talent and saying, we want this guy to be the guy, this guy to be the face of the company. And I think specifically in somewhere like AEW, where that is very wrestling focused, like that's their bread and butter. We've never really seen a Black male wrestler be positioned as in that best in the world wrestler conversation. We've always heard, oh, he's a good athlete. Oh, he has so much potential. But we've never really seen a Black wrestler be able to wrestle some of the best wrestlers in the world and hold their own. And it's not because the talent wasn't there, it was just because the opportunity wasn't there. It was the full package of. And also, it was the timing, and to be able to say from Revolution 2022 up until Dynasty 2024, that was the timeline for becoming world champion. When have we ever seen something like that happen in such a fairly short amount of time? We haven't. To if you think about the title wins that have happened in other places, typically as talent, they are, they've been in the company anywhere between, let's say, 7, 10 years. And they don't get that. They don't get that. And when they do get their moment, it's not, they're never framed as the champion. 9 times out of 10, there's another world champion. Like, there's another world champion who's seen as the world champion. So I really appreciated this moment. Not just for Swerve, I think more so for what it could mean for the future of Black wrestlers as a whole.
There's a sense that the title win was, from a character perspective, really earned. That it wasn't just thrown slapped together like, oh man, we need a champion. Let's put the title on Swerve, or we need a quick ratings jump. Let's change the title and here, Swerve, take the title. AEW is a company that I think really, like, for the most part, unless CM Punk is involved, meticulously plans out who their world champion is going to be. I think that there's the thing that Tony knew who his first five world champions were going to be the moment he started the company. It's going to be this person, this person, this person. And you could see the vision of Swerve becoming the next world champion. I don't know, probably like 6 months ago or so, probably right when maybe the feud with Hangman started. And he, was put over, especially by the end when he was put over Hangman, it was basically like, okay, this guy's got to win the world title at some point in 2024. And so, as a wrestling fan, there was the sense of this was something that not only was, it wasn't like, oh my gosh, we got to get the title on somebody. It was, okay, there's a sense of faith in we're going to put the title on Swerve because we think he can be a top guy, which is a company saying we're going to put our title on a Black man because we think he can be our top guy. Are there going to be other people that maybe get pushed to the same level or even past him? Probably within AEW, but it, I think, came across as a real sign of confirmation and faith. And this is a guy we want to be our next champion. We want this guy to be in that very top echelon of stars that we have. And I think that's important in context too. It wasn't like I love Big E, but when Big E won the title, it felt like a ratings grab. It felt like they put the Money in the Bank briefcase on him. They wanted to do something to pop a rating. He popped the rating, but then his title reign, was pretty abrupt. He got basically squashed a few months later, and that's like kind of the example of like they kind of slapped the title on somebody just because they had to. And this feels much more substantial, I think, because of the build that went into it and the effort that went into building up Swerve. So when he won this title, it felt like a deserved, well-earned story and not just a jump to try to grab some headlines.
Yeah, I think it's great that you mentioned Big E. Him and Kofi Kingston, I think, were big fan favorites. I mean, like, I know I grew up loving those guys. And it really, I will say, like, that their title reigns leave such a sour taste in my mouth. And I think it should have been such a joyous occasion that you can look back on, but it's very clear, like, they were never seen as the guys long term. And I think that's where a lot of frustration comes from for me, is because, like I said, I've been a wrestling fan for almost 2 decades now. I'm not interested in like cheap representation ploys. I want substantial and intentional investment into Black wrestlers and their futures. And I think, having both him and Kofi lose in these squash matches, even Big E, like being champion at the same time as Roman, never really seen as like equals, like, because technically the world title belts are supposed to be seen as equals, and that was never the case. And so yeah, I and I've said this numerous times, when big signings come around, a company, when they want you, they have plans for you. They have plans for you to get you from point A to point Z. We've seen it time and time again. We see it with people like Will Ospreay right now, right? Like, it's no doubt in anybody's mind that he's going to be a future world champion at AEW. Like, nobody doubts that. And it's because, like, he has that level of talent. And so for a company to do that with a Black talent and see that, in them, and say, I'm going to get you from point A to point Z, that's unprecedented in many ways. And I really wish that all of the people who came before had gotten those opportunities, because, like I said, it has nothing to do with the talent. I look at Big E and Kofi Kingston, especially, when you have to think the New Day got themselves over organically, like very organically. They made people pay attention to them. Like, they were doing crazy merch numbers. Their stuff was flying off of the shelves.
Well, their original
And
gimmick
they
was
never,
bad. Their original gimmick was like bad. Like the on
it
paper, the
was
gimmick was
terrible.
bad.
Yes, and they made themselves stars. They made themselves stars. And I just wish that they had gotten the type of intentionality behind some of their reigns, because I think that they're both deserving, and not just them, but several other talents who've never gotten world title runs. Shelton Benjamin is one of them in my mind. So yeah, that's all I got.
Yeah, I mean, I think I'm gonna agree with you and disagree with you to a certain point, because I do think that, I'm not sure that AEW signed Swerve with the intention of him being one of those first few world champions. I'm not convinced that that was the initial vision. I am, however, entirely convinced that in the last 6, 7, 8 months, it's become incredibly apparent, due to his match quality, due to his promos, due to just the way he's been able to get himself over, that he was the next guy. And so I don't know if I want to give AEW the credit for its intentionality in the way that they've handled Swerve since the beginning, because you see some of the stuff that they had, some of the booking mishaps, I would say, that they had when they had him teaming with Keith Lee, and even afterwards, of sort of existing in that, okay, well, what comes next? So I'm not entirely sure that they had the creative vision or the creative foresight to see this is going to be our next world champion, but he, very similarly, I would say, he put that vision in their heads. He made that apparent, that he had it, and it was just going to be a matter of whether or not they were going to take advantage of it. And so, yeah, I don't think I'm going to give AEW credit for having the foresight to see it from beforehand. I will give AEW the credit for acknowledging it, and for going with it, because even in the past, we've had moments, we've had people who have done very similar things and, gotten themselves over, and, like you said, been ready, and the company or the people in charge, it doesn't matter. Regardless of what they're going to do, you're not going to be our top guy. So, sort of a level of, I don't know, maybe it's just being cynical, but yeah.
Yeah, that's fair. The reason why I said like I think, and maybe the ch plan was not world champion. You know, maybe that was not the initial plan. From the way that he was presented at Revolution 2022, like I remember a lot of people were like, "Who is this guy?" Of like, this is just like the NXT reject. You know, like, but having him come out and was just like, they treated him like a blockbuster signing then, even when a lot of other people felt like they did, it's like he wasn't one. Like I would be honest, at that point, I didn't know who Swerve was because I didn't watch NXT at that point. Like I had no idea who Swerve was. And I think another thing, like you said, about there were a lot of failings in the booking, but I do think like what I like you said, what I appreciate is being willing to recognize that and pivot. And
And well in
because
advance.
yes, well
Yeah.
in advance, because how many times like I look back to the mogul affiliates, it's like that sucked. That sucked. That 100% sucked. It was a terrible fit. But you know, and keep in mind, in a lot of companies, you know, black wrestlers, you have one gimmick that sucks. That's it. That's it. You get one chance. But being able to pivot and say, like, okay, this isn't working. Let's put you with the embassy. Let's see how this works. And it ends up being a huge hit. And so, yes, I think that maybe the four, I agree. Maybe it wasn't originally the plan of saying, okay, he's going to be our world champion one day. But you know, they should get the props for course correcting and pivoting.
Yeah, I mean, when Swerve was first signed by AEW, I was pretty familiar with him. I had seen him in NXT. I had seen him before when he was Killshot Lucha Underground. I was trying to rack my memory and see if I think I'd seen him live at an Evolve show before. I would say fairly familiar with him. And the disc some of the discourse that I saw regarding him signing with AEW, I mean, I was enthusiastic about him signing. But you know, I heard some people that were like, "Oh, he's gonna be a world champion. He's the dude. He's the guy you push." And for me, I was like, "He's a good wrestler. He's got some charisma. I don't see him as like this undeniable talent." But pretty shortly, into his run in AEW, I was sold. I was like, "All right, this he I, he the people that were hyping up his potential, I think, are right." I think he was kind of the star of that tag team with Keith Lee, because when they started tag teaming, Keith Lee to me was the much more s established star of that team. I think you could say he was more over. He was, he's Keith Lee. He's the big guy that does cool moves. Everyone likes him. But it became kind of apparent, like if you were, I think, seriously analyzing like what pro wrestling is, who has the higher ceiling. It was Swerve, and I think I'm still waiting on that match between the two of them. I don't know what specifically is the holdup on that end. But I think that he did kind of break out. I agree with Danny. I don't think he was signed with the idea of being like, oh yeah, well, he's going to be world champion in 2024. I think that he consistently achieved in a way that made that an obvious decision. Which shouldn't really be applauded, but historically has been something that's been ignored by promoters and bookers for generations, is to recognize that kind of talent and to pivot into Lyric. You made a great point when I was listening to your show last week, which was that like Swerve was put into a position, not originally, but eventually put into a position for him to succeed with being paired with Nana, giving him the embassy, giving him someone that could do a little bit of the extra talking for him, and to make him more comfortable and to put him into a better position to succeed. And that is something that has not always existed for black talents. You mentioned Shelton Benjamin as a great example of someone who maybe had superstar potential, but wasn't given the proper position he needed to get to that next level. And I think that is a really important point, because I think a lot of times if you have the discussion about who are, okay, there's obviously been a real shortage of black main event talents in the history of pro wrestling, and especially the recent history, the last 20, 30 years. And you say, like, well, what names came along that should have been in the main event, that should have been a world champion, but never were? And I feel like when you have that discussion, it's kind of ignoring some of the really key aspects are you're a lot of times talent, black talent hasn't even been put into the position to get into the position to be a main eventer, if that makes
Yeah,
sense.
we
Like,
don't know. Yep.
right.
We don't know. That's really that's a point that I feel like comes up a lot. It's like, okay, who did we miss? Had we been giving everyone the proper attention and the proper, the proper opportunity, we could have had a myriad of different stars. And so while you might have a few names that come up here and there, as people who may have just been missing one element, we could have had 50 who were missing two things we could have easily fixed, two things that could have been fixed by a booker or by a promoter. But black people, and in addition to in the wrestling world, are rarely given much grace, let alone second chances. And so if you don't have everything put together, even if I didn't give you the tools you need to be successful, even if we haven't, as a company, set you up for success in any capacity, if you can't do it, it's still on you. We're gonna move on, versus you think of, I didn't mean to cut you off, but yeah, this is a point that comes up a lot. But think of how many gimmicks some of your favorite white wrestlers went through in order to become the wrestlers that we think of them today. That we think of today. Black people don't get second chances in this industry. And they never really have.
And I think that's why Shelton Benjamin is such a great example, because he was in a class with Batista, John Cena, and Brock Lesnar. And in that entire class, when they started, everybody was missing at least one thing, if not two. If not two. Batista couldn't talk. What do? They put him in a faction full of Hall of Famers. Brock Lesnar, he gets paired with, Paul Heyman. John Cena, he gets to they get they try different things with him, because at first he did suck, and then they finally land on something that works. Shelton Benjamin, he gets a mammy character. That's what he gets. And it's just like, you're on your own. And now we're on the tail end of his career, and he's almost 50. So everybody's like, huh, this guy never a world champion. And it's the little things, because he was the better wrestler out of just about every last one of them, when especially when they first started.
Yeah, you mentioned Shelton Benjamin. I had kind of blacked out the Mammy character from my mind. But when you mentioned it, when I heard you mention that last week, I was like, that really was like a career. I don't want to say killing, because he went on to have a fine career, all things considered. But that was really a career killing kind of gimmick. Because if we go back in the time machine to 2005, or maybe it was 2006 when he got the new character, but he was a star on the rise. He was young. He was getting over. He was definitely someone that had tons of potential. And he was just given one of the worst gimmicks of the last 25 years, a gimmick that was offensive in a lot of ways. And his career never really recovered. He has never been as over as he was before it. And I think it sent him, unfortunately, due to no fault of his own, down a path of being kind of just a mid-carder and floating in and out of WWE and other wrestling promotions, which was not his ceiling at all. His ceiling was as high as most of the members of his class that you mentioned, but he wasn't given the kind of chances and opportunities to get over to that degree. And I think that's really important. It's a really important distinction when we talk about wrestling is, okay, there's like The Rock, who is a very, pretty obviously, although not at first, but pretty obviously super, super, super charismatic, once in a generation level kind of performer, steps into the room, everyone looks at him. Most wrestlers are not like that. Most top wrestlers are not like that. Pretty much everyone is going to need some level of support from booking, trial and error chances to try new things without, like getting that second, third, fourth opportunity. And that opportunity has not been afforded to Black wrestlers at nearly the same rate it has been afforded to pretty much every other type of wrestler. And that is, I think, really limits not only the number of Black world champions that we've had, but even the people that feel like they could have been world champion if just one thing had changed differently. I mean, personally, I think just in general, if you look at the number, first of all, wrestling, just if you look at like Nielsen data, wrestling over indexes with the Black audience. I think something like 30% of WWE's audience is Black. AEW's audience is slightly smaller, but still higher than the US percentage of the US population. Yet there should so there should be really tons and tons and tons of Black wrestlers everywhere. And I think that there are a lot of reasons why we don't see that. I think it goes all the way back down to the independents not booking Black wrestlers, training schools and maybe not training Black wrestlers maybe not feeling comfortable going to training schools that are run by white, old white wrestlers who maybe don't have the best way to connect with younger Black prospective wrestlers. And I think all of that contributes to underrepresentation. It starts at the start of the wrestling industry and goes all the way up to the top. So when we finally get to someone like Swerve, it feels like a big deal because he's one of the only few people to ever really get that opportunity. And that obviously isn't fair.
Yeah, I think also too of just like you said, it starts from the bottom up to the top. A lot of times it has nothing to do with the wrestlers themselves. It comes with the leadership. People are more inclined to hire people who look like them. And if nobody in that room looks like you, then you are already at a disadvantage. If you think about how many historically, how many executives in wrestling and are people in leading creative roles in wrestling have been Black historically, the number is very small. And most of those hires are very, very, very recent in the very grand scheme of thing. If you look through who's trainers, who's coaches in major wrestling organizations, very few are Black. And not even just Black, very few are people of color, period. If you look at who owns wrestling schools, who's actually running wrestling schools, very few are Black. I can't even. I think the only person I can really name off the top of my head right now is Booker T with Reality of Wrestling in Texas. I
AR
can't
Fo
think
AR
of many more.
Fox, right?
AR Fox as well. Yes, AR Fox as well. There's not many. And now more than ever, we're starting to see the effects of that. Just because this is the biggest wrestling talent pool I think that we've ever had. There's talent everywhere. And but at the same time, as the wrestlers are becoming more diverse here, there, and everywhere. Oh, it's one more. Andy Quilden, in the UK, RevPro, head booker, Andy Quilden, is a Black man. But when you look around, the talent is getting more diverse. But look at the leadership. And it's one of those things of we can end up having a split of it could be 80% Black wrestlers on any given show, but until the leadership changes, until like the executives diversify, until more people of color and more women are in those rooms, we're going to continue to like essentially circle the drain on some of these things because especially if you have a writer's room, you have a creative team. I think a lot of storylines, a lot of things have to be handled with care when you're considering Black talent. And I think the Hangman Swerve is a great example, right? That could have easily gone really, 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 really
So
bad.
easily.
So bad, bro.
If they
It could have
did,
easily gone so
yeah, I
bad.
think that was everyone's concern was like, I hope they don't do the same minute finish as the Hangman Moxley match because that is not going to go well.
And there were so
Absolutely.
many moments where I was like, Hangman, don't say anything. Don't respond to that last line.
You can tell somebody Black was on that creative team.
Yes.
You can tell. And those are it's the small things that make a big difference because I guarantee if there wasn't, this could have the talking points of that feud and the talking points of Swerve's rise would be completely different. And those type of things can define somebody's career for the negative. And it, like, it could have gone like when, and I remember like loving everything on screen, but also holding my breath and also like being like, oh God,
Be
Cowboy, please.
careful.
Please don't embarrass me.
Everybody think before you speak.
Everybody, please think. But it was handled with care. And then we don't see that a lot. And like I said, part of it is on the performers, but part of it is on intentionally having diverse people on the back end to check stuff. Like, for example, like, you know, how many times have we seen something get said or done? Like, I'll even look at the MJF Bullet Club Gold feud of just the quarters incident, right? And I think one of the reports came out was just like, MJF, oh, he didn't even think about that. And it was like nothing was wrong. Because here's the thing, anybody who's been watching Juice Robinson since New Japan knows that he does the quarters gimmick all the time. Like, it has nothing really to do with race, but it was the timing of it all. Of like, there was there nobody in the room to say, huh? In the midst of all of the things that are happening in the world right now around Jewish hate, and you know, maybe we shouldn't do this right now. Like, you know, maybe we shouldn't do
Cultural
this.
sensitivity
Exactly.
goes, it needs to exist in every aspect. And like, yeah, so behind the scenes, in front of the cameras, that is definitely, for all that we've lacked representation, we have lacked cultural sensitivity 10 times over, you know.
Oh.
Yeah, it there needs to be Black and POC input in decision making, especially in regards to things that are going to go on screen and, you know, considering race. And I didn't mean to cut you off, Lyric, but I was
What?
just gonna add, even when we talk about underrepresentation, and talking about, okay, yeah, we have this increased pool of Black talent, I always get worried because I'm like, all right, so who's next? So Swerve is first. Who else are we grooming? Well, shouldn't we? Who else are we preparing to be to be next, to be the next Black World Champion? And so who else is starting to get that treatment? Who else are we looking at with eyes to be like, it could be you? And there, it's hard to picture, you know. That's not to say that the AEW has an amazing roster of people that are incredibly talented, and a lot of them are Black. A lot of those people have the potential to be world champion. Is anybody being set up to be that? Is anybody being set up as a main event talent outside of Swerve, as a standalone main alone singles talent? You know, and so I think that we talk about, you know, Swerve's win, and it did mean a lot. What you don't want to do, or you don't want to fall into tokenization. You don't want it to be a check mark. Okay, we got one, we're done, you know. So the way that I start looking is, all right, you know, who's next up? And so I hope that going forward, that can be something that's considered as well, not just taking advantage of the moment, not just when people are already starting to get over, not just when people are already having people rally behind them and say that this guy's next up. You know, who's that going to be? Because you start thinking about, in my line of who's potentially the next world champion, obviously want Swerve to enjoy his title reign, then you have to think it's Ospreay. You know, you have to think it's Ospreay. There's potential after that, though, you know. There's room for more storylines, for someone to step in. There's room for that. Are we preparing Black talent to be ready to be in that conversation?
Absolutely. I think also too. Oh, go ahead.
I was just gonna say, to Danny's point, I think if you were to look at the AEW roster in terms of like the hierarchy of who feels ready, and if you were to look at Black talent specifically on the men's side at least, it does feel like there's a pretty big gap between Swerve and whoever like the next most over, most popular, most ready wrestler would be. That's a Black man. I would say probably Powerhouse Hobbs, but I don't know if he'll ever be a main event champion in AEW. But I would say that that's a fair point in terms of they have a lot of black male talent now, but a lot of it seems to be positioned either in tag teams or in the undercard, which sadly is kind
Agreed.
of historically the case.
I was gonna say, I could see it definitely on the black women's side. I think that there's a lot of potential for a lot of there are right now at least three people that I could see being AEW Women's World Champion within the next 2 years who are black. I think that Mercedes, obviously. I think that Willow is going to win that belt eventually. And I think Queen Amanada is going to be a world champion. I do believe that Queen Amanada is going to be a world champion. I think on the tag side, I think it's inevitable that, we're going to see Top Flight or Private Party. And to be quite honest, I think Shane Taylor Promotions is probably ahead of both of them right
Possibly.
now, as far as like getting regular television time. Like, I could see them winning those tag tr or trios belts eventually. And for the mid-card titles, I think it's a bit of a toss-up. I do think like some people in like these factions, like they have like singles potential. I do think Shane Taylor is one of those people. Like, that is one of the things I think. Like, when we look back 2 years ago, Swerve lost all the time. All the time. But he was always booked. And a lot of times the AEW booking way is that we'll see people, even if they're losing all the time, they're always booked. And then eventually they start winning. That's why I think that there could be some potential for somebody like a Shane Taylor, just because like he's been booked and busy just about
Right.
every
And this
single
is the
week.
same with Amanada. It's the
Yes,
similar thread.
absolutely.
Yeah.
Yep, that
And
is,
so
and that's how that you're right. That's a pattern of how Tony books, which is especially when it comes to maybe younger or under featured talents, they keep an eye on them and they get
you
them
need
on
to be
TV a lot.
seen. Absolutely. You need to be recognized. And so we may not have you get the win over this big talent that's already over, but now next week when you fight again, people know who Queen Amanada is. And that plays a massive role. And I do think that's one of the strengths that AEW has, especially in having a rotating roster. That is how they start to build people up. Yeah, you have to lose a bunch and it sucks on the front end, but it can pay massive dividends, but yeah, you start thinking about, what the future landscape looks like instead of just the present. And it starts to be a similar conversation as to what the past has been, which is, well, I can think of a couple names.
And guess what?
Maybe.
There's a whole other conversation, like I think that is being often skipped over, which is that's just black talent. Think about how many talented Hispanic people are on the AEW rosters and now on their AEW roster. And Rey Fénix won the international championship by accident. When have we seen, like, I will say, the Lucha roster that AEW has is insane.
They have like a
Like,
limitless, like when you said how many Hispanic wrestlers are there, like they
limitless.
have literally a limitless supply.
Absolutely. And I think it's also one of those things where they do amazing in places like Texas, where CMLL was a huge success as far as a partnership. The recent addition of Carlos Cabrera was clearly a hit for Spanish speakers. And it's one of those things to where, to be honest, that should be one of the primary focuses of investing in Hispanic talent should be a huge focus, I think, for AEW going forward, because that is an audience that they do very, very well in. And another one is also Japanese talent. You have the opportunity. I know you're I'm gonna let you do your Takeshita rant. I'm gonna let you do it. I'm gonna let you do it. But you have the opportunity to do something that's never been done before. And I wrote, and this was a part of an article that came out today. I was writing about Okada, Ospreay, Danielson, and Omega, but specifically Okada, who has talked about wanting to be on the level and even surpass somebody like the New Japan founder, Antonio Inoki. Antonio Inoki was the first Japanese WWF champion. in a reign that was never formally recognized, in order to, you know, protect Bob Backlund at the time. As many Japanese wrestlers that have come over to the States ever since, there's never been a Japanese formally recognized male world champion of any major American promotion. And you have to believe that if anybody is going to do it, it has to be Okada. It has to be Okada. And that's still a mountain yet to climb. And then you have Takeshita.
Yeah, sorry.
Go ahead.
Just sorry. Can I just jump in? Just point of order. Jumbo Tsuruta was AWA world champion towards the back end of the AWA. And Giant Baba was technically two-time NWA world champion, although he never, I believe, defended it in the United States. It was like these quick turns in Japan. But the point still stands. Because my listeners will want to point, will snarkily point that out in the comments.
I appreciate that.
It's all good. My God. AEW in particular, and WWE too, right now has the opportunity to invest in POC as the future of their company. And quite frankly, you need to. You see people like Daniel Garcia. What is he missing? Why hasn't he been getting, you know, consistent wins against consistent top talent? Why are we not pushing him for a singles title yet? It's always not yet. It's always not yet. Konosuke Takeshita, when he first came over here, first came into AEW, you started having people have conversations like, all right, hold on. He's having these amazing matches. He's putting on these bangers and he keeps losing, but we're waiting for to get that turn where he, you know, where he starts getting those big wins. Then he had a few, you know, he beat Omega twice. And now here we are again. We're having a conversation about, okay, like what comes next for him? He's going to challenge Jon Moxley for the IWGP world title. I don't think he's going to win that. I don't think a lot of us are convinced that he's going to win that. But I think the overarching point is a lot of times for Black wrestlers, for POC wrestlers, it's a lot of that, oh, you could be next. You could be, you know, you just got to wait your opportunity. You just got to, you know, but the wrestling world moves so quickly that if you are not given the proper support and the proper booking and not taking advantage of the moment in a lot of ways, these people that are always going to be the future are now going to turn into, you know, what could have been. And so I worry looking at POC talent, like they put Takeshita with Don Callis, and I don't think any of us loved that, you know, have loved that as a result. And you just talk about things that stunt career growth. We're talking about, you know, Shelton Benjamin's gimmick. You don't want to fall into a place where it's always wait your turn, wait your turn. You could be next if we choose that you are. At what point is the future now?
Yep. I think, and that's a really good point. Somebody made a post yesterday on Twitter and they put all the names of the AEW talent 30 years old and under. It was 27 names. And out of all of those names, 9 of those people have already held gold in AEW. And 4 of those people have already been world champions. And so it comes to a point where it can't continuously be like, oh, it's an age thing, because the thing is, you are pushing young talent, because you, MJF was a world champion at 27. You know, like we've seen it. Like we've seen it. And so it, like Danny said, what is it that some of these guys aren't missing? Because especially when you think about somebody like a Daniel Garcia, Daniel Garcia has done all the losing. And I think we were all fine with him losing every match in the Continental Classic as long as it turned into something, because we were like, oh, it's going to start this run, he's going to be on the way to the title, and he ends up losing. Like, what's up? That same thing with Takeshita, of just he lost a lot of matches. And the fact is, if anybody else beat Kenny Omega, pinned Kenny Omega twice, they would be a world champion by now. That's mm-hmm. that type of win that should catapult you into superstardom. But instead, we're in this stasis pattern. And the thing is, Takeshi's only getting better. And he's, and it's getting to a point where almost where I hate to say this, but if something doesn't shift dramatically within, I would say, the next year or two, I'd send him, I think he should go to New Japan. That's a place that could use him and would immediately send him straight to the top.
I think what you're both touching
And so,
on. Sorry, no, go ahead, Danny.
oh, yeah, I was just going to say, so I think there's a delicate balance also because we talk about AEW has a stacked roster. It's hard for anyone to break through. It's hard for anyone to get consistent TV time. But at the same time, needing to take a look at what is leading to the decisions that are being made. You know, what is the logic behind some of these things? So are recognizing that not everybody can have a title. We would say we probably have too many titles already. Not everybody can be, you know, a main event or can be, you know, this, that, and a third. But that is one of the benefits of having a rotating roster is that some people can be, you know. Yeah. And so I think that I especially hear what Lyric's saying, and like in a world where there's so much more than ever before, I think, autonomy for wrestlers and for talent themselves. I think AEW does potentially run the risk with a lot of talent of color of feeling as if they're being underutilized, or feeling as though they're, you know, kind of getting all that talk that it could be you next, it could be you next, because in other companies or in other places, you would be the top guy, you know, you would be, or you would be challenging the top guy. So I don't know. I think it's complicated. I think it's complex trying to navigate that with also, you know, with my idealism of, okay, in my ideal world, Konosuke Takeshita would be world champion every day forever. He's just, I just love Takeshita, you know? So trying to moderate that with a little bit more of an objective mindset. Okay, so not everybody can be world champion. Not everybody can be TNT champion. Everybody can be TBS champion. Understanding that, okay, looking at this roster, who can be, who is being set up to be successful, and where are we lacking in when the people with over just so much potential. But yeah, that's my
I
we
think
get to talk about Takeshi and I lose all sense, so you know.
I think you're both touching on what has been a consistent identifiable issue in AEW, which is AEW has a class of wrestlers who I would consider to be the true main eventers in AEW. And what I mean by that is, I think the easiest way to define that is, do these people have a program for every single pay-per-view that AEW has? And it's not a huge group of people, but it is, when healthy, Kenny Omega, MJF, Chris Jericho, Bryan Danielson, Jon Moxley. I want to say Hangman, but Hangman comes and goes so much, it's hard to really put him in that box. But it's a very limited group of people who I think have the full creative attention, and a lot of it has to do with salaries and how much they're paying guys and things like that. And I think Swerve winning the world title and getting to this position, what is that really worth? Like, the title is essentially just a prop for entertainment value. The real value in that, I think, is that he has now put himself into that position where he is with those other guys in terms of Swerve always has to be doing something.
Yeah.
But the sad reality is that that's only a small segment of the roster. In the rest of the roster, 80% of it or so, they're kind of featured as needed. I don't think there's necessarily a ton of discussion about, all right, what's Takeshita doing at the next pay-per-view? What's Danny Garcia doing at the next pay-per-view? And I think that's a real problem. And I think keeps feeling when you have these young talent that start to get over, and there's nothing more exciting to wrestling fans than young talent that they've never seen before start getting pushed. It's just like in real sports, people love prospects, people love seeing young players, people love seeing young wrestlers. It's one of those things. But because of the politics of pro wrestling, a lot of the people that I mentioned that are in that top echelon have creative control, have creative input. Some of them have dual contracts to work as advisors or whatever Tony Khan wants to call them. And that makes it, there's just very limited spots when you have those talents that are kind of always need that kind of attention. And a lot of them are older. A lot of them have probably hit their ceilings in terms of star power or things like that. Whether you like them or not, like I know a lot of people are really down on Chris Jericho right now, but even someone like John Moxley, who most people seem to really like, and I think has been an absolutely wonderful performer for AEW, he's probably hit his ceiling as a draw in terms of, I don't know how much bigger of a star John Moxley can become in AEW at this stage of his career. And it also becomes a problem when you keep signing all of these WWE wrestlers to money, and then you bring them in. Like, I think Adam Copeland and Christian Cage have done great work since signed by AEW. I've been a fan of their performances, but they're also guys with that are 50 with very limited ceilings in terms of how much bigger they can become. And you're paying them all this money, so you feel obligated to feature them and get as much out of them as possible. But is that coming at the expense of younger talents that is struggling to get over? And in a lot of cases, because we've been dealing with this generational issue of people, wrestlers of color, not getting the same kind of opportunities, it just so happens that all these expensive old WWE wrestlers all happen to be white for the most part. So you have that extra wrinkle where not only are you giving ta th these positions lo are locked into older talent, they're being locked into older white talent. And that is an extra hurdle that all of these other wrestlers that are trying to break out are trying to find a footing on.
Yeah, I think that's a really great point. And I think that with AEW being in year five specifically, we are seeing the first real signs of the old guard aging out. Like, I'm not gonna lie, as a person who lives, breathes, and dies by Kenny Omega, the when he went down, it was like the first time that it really clicked, like he's not gonna do this forever. Like he's
Why would you
not,
say that?
I know it hurts. It hurts. And like it, my heart broke just saying that. Same thing with Bryan Danielson right now. He's not gonna do this forever. Chris Jericho, way past his prime. Even with
Well,
Mox,
sorry.
yeah, well, yes.
Sorry, go
But
ahead.
even with Mox, of like you said, he's really as probably as big of a star in AEW as he's ever going to be. New Japan's a different story. I think he's always going to be a draw there. But we're seeing that original old guard of AEW start to age out. And the thing is, at the end of the day, you could say, well, over in WWE, they're not making any new stars. But at the end of the day, AEW's supposed to be different than WWE. They said they would be different, they would be an alternative. They would push the new generation of, this new generation and young wrestlers, and we're going to get new ideas and fresh concepts. And don't get me wrong, we've gotten that to a certain extent. But especially now, especially in year five, when it's very clear that that original guard of main event talent in AEW is aging out, there's no excuse for not pushing forth these guys, like these
There's
younger.
opportunity. Yeah,
Absolutely.
and I think that Well, I'm trying to balance my own personal emotions and my the way I try to view things a little bit more objectively. I definitely think that there is some merit to if Kenny Omega is available, I'm putting Kenny Omega on the card. If Bryan Danielson is available, I'm putting Bryan Danielson on the card. And they have earned that certain level of respect and that certain level of assurance of, okay, if I'm gonna have a show and I can have these people, I want them on it. They're draws and they put on fantastic matches. Chris Jericho is also there. But I would say that oftentimes what we're not looking at is, okay, if we're filling up five or six spots with that being said, is who's facing them? And we have people like Takeshita who are getting the opportunity to go over the old guard and then not making anything of that. And so even sometimes we're looking at, this group of five or six, or even beyond the main eventers of those sorts of people, we have some older talent that aren't going to do this forever, we know that eventually we're going to have to start thinking about who's next. And I think it goes back to that conversation that we started to have at the beginning, which is, okay, Swerve is now, you know, who are we priming to be the next Black world champion, to be the first Japanese world champion, to be the first, you know, Hispanic world champion in AEW? So, like, I think there is some merit, and people always like to be like, oh, put the best talent out there. They do. They do consistently.
But the talent of color is the best talent available. Exactly.
But the talent of color is also the best talent. And that's where I feel like we're losing a lot of things, is that we only think of these five or six as the upper echelon because that's how we treat them. But that does not mean that they are the only five or six that can be elite level performers and have top level matches. And I would argue that every time, for the most part, that talent outside of those few people have been given those opportunities to square up with those aforementioned, it's gone really well. Nobody has had an awful showing. Nobody has had that comes to mind immediately, you know, nobody has been particularly bad. I would say most of them were better than fine. Some of them were really, really good. And so I think it's just a matter of, okay, we are seeing people take advantage of the limited opportunities that they're being given. Are they being primed to be next in line, or are we so harped on the now that we're not focusing on the future and building a future that truly represents who the best in the world are?
Yep. I think also you made a great point, especially of, like, I understand that these people are getting paid a lot of money. And so there, it feels like you're not getting a return on investment if you don't put them on TV. But I truly believe that you'll get your return on investment when you push some of these guys who are, it continues to come back to, like, Takeshita, of just not just having a good showing, not just having a decent showing, having excellent showings. Daniel Garcia, one of those people too. Think of that 2 out of 3 falls match with Brian Danielson. He has a win over Brian Danielson. And you,
what else can they do to prove to you that they need to be next?
And when you look at some of the other people who have held singles titles in recent years and recent months, can you tell me that their reign is particularly worth more than the potential that these guys had in the grand scheme of things? Like, I am an Adam Copeland stan. I am an OG Edge head, truly. Like, that is my guy. I have been having a blast with this, you know, AEW run. But to be quite honest, outside of my own personal, like, relishing in it, it's time for him to grab that tag rope. And I don't mean that in a bad way. I think, like, you know, that could be it. He, especially, like, think about with Christian, could be very useful in the tag division. But when he has the TNT championship and Daniel Garcia does not, and our talent like Daniel Garcia does not, we have to start having some really important conversations of how are we prepping for the future when he is flat out said he only has, what, a year and a half left in wrestling? He's flat out said he has, what, maybe a year and a half, maybe 2 years if we're lucky, in wrestling. And at least, you know, Brian Danielson's one of those people who just, like, let me wrestle good, cool matches, but I don't even want a belt, which I think there's pros and cons to that, obviously. You know, as a fan, I would love to see him be world champion. But at the same time, like, some of these older talent, it's time to start laying down. If you want the next 5 years and the 5 years after that, if you want AEW to be sustainable long term and to be this diverse alternative. That was one of the things that I loved most about AEW in the announcement when they first announced the company. Seeing a diverse roster, seeing queer people represented. We haven't even gotten into that. Like, we haven't even gotten into that. that was one of the things that I particularly fell in love with, seeing diversity, like, you know, having a Black woman in a VP position. Like, those were the things that originally attracted me to the company because that was different than what everybody else was doing. And not saying that they're doing a bad job because, like, hey, they have two Black people in major leadership positions and, like, they, have Okada holding the Continental Championship, Swerve is world champion, but they can always do better. And they need to do better and they need to prepare for their future to be even better, especially as it relates to inclusivity.
I think with AEW, and especially with Swerve, that's really important to keep in mind, and especially different than WWE and really historically, throughout all of wrestling. And you both have mentioned it several times. Like, typically, the people that have made creative decisions in wrestling are older white men. And especially in WWE, if you just look through the history of gimmicks that have been given to people of color, have relied really immensely on outdated stereotypes and characters that many people would find offensive and have in a lot of ways stunted careers. And AEW as a major pro wrestling organization that grants a lot more autonomy to the individual talent feels like a better place for someone like Swerve to be himself and by turn feel authentic, which makes the crowd believe in this person. Like we mentioned, like the New Day got over, but the New Day's original gimmick of this choir singing, I guess they were supposed to be heels at first, but it was clearly just it was an outdated, dumb gimmick, didn't make any sense that they got over because they were really creative and they worked extremely hard. And they eventually tweaked it enough so it no longer resembled what the original gimmick was, which is a rarity in WWE that they were even allowed to do that. But I do think when I see Swerve, I think this guy feels like, and he's obviously, he's playing a character to a degree, but he feels like an authentic modern person and not a stereotype from the 1950s, which is what unfortunately historically many people of color in wrestling have been pigeonholed into. I've always said that about Vince. I think Vince's solution to anyone that wasn't like a white American was for them to just become more foreign or more whatever they were. It's always a joke with like any English wrestler that he's ever had has had to be a king at some point because like you need a character, you need to be a king. Or even Drew McIntyre when he was kind of fledgling as world champion, they're like, you just got to be more Scottish, Drew. You got to come out with the Braveheart face paint and you're going to have a giant sword and you're going to tell these weird Scottish folk stories. And it's like, can't he just be a real person? Why does he have to be like this cartoon character? But historically, that's wrestling. That's the way that people worked. And I think it's definitely worked against, people of color and especially Black wrestlers. And I'm hoping with AEW and now, fingers crossed, Vince out of creative position in WWE, we can at least move past that version and allow these talents to be themselves, which in turn will make them feel more authentic.
For me, that's
Go ahead.
why. Oh, yeah. That's why I will say I have really enjoyed the presentation of people like Willow Nightingale. Because let's just be real, anywhere else, and we have seen in everywhere else, not just WWE and other places too, a plus size Black woman is going to immediately be slotted in as a heel. Immediately. You're going to be this huge record or character. Even if we go back to Japan. To Aja Kong, because she was Black, she was slotted as a heel, and there was nothing she could do about it. Was she in? Did she end up becoming one of the greatest of all times and being amazing? Absolutely. Even like Awesome Kong, there was never a place for Black women, especially who don't fit a certain body type, to be bubbly and cheery, still be powerful, but be inspirational to be a baby face. Even when you look right now at the gimmick that Okada is doing right now in AEW, for him to have be a heel, but it not revolve around him being Japanese and this foreign invader gimmick, that's huge and that's different.
He's not throwing
We've
salt in people's eyes and
exactly and misting people, like that's rare. He's a heel because he's cocky and he's talented and successful. It has nothing to do with his nationality. And
Yeah, he's just
also,
an asshole.
yes,
He's a
exactly. That's what I
rich,
want.
yeah,
Exactly.
he's a rich playboy asshole.
Yeah.
And his language barrier has nothing to do with whether or not he's going to be successful, because we've seen that used as a crutch over and over again. Well, they can't talk. Well, they don't speak English. And I really appreciate, especially as a fan, a lover of Japanese wrestling, him being put into a position where he's allowed to let other things speak for him, and not just having the books next to him. His body language is top tier. His charisma is top tier. The way that he emotes, his facial expressions have gotten 10 times better since coming over to the States.
He is
Yeah.
I just want to add, like, I'm a huge Okada fan, loved him in New Japan, and I think he's one of the greatest wrestlers of all time. He is so much better at like being an American TV wrestler than I thought he would be. Like, I knew he would be good. I'm like, he's Okada, he's gonna be fine, but he's like legitimately great at doing the things that people would think that he wouldn't be good at,
He
like
couldn't
being
do.
looking at the hard
And
camera and making these smirky ass faces, and he is
when I
so
tell
much
you
better.
that sitting there at Dynasty, when we thought he was gonna hit the Rainmaker and he flipped off the audience and said, there was no language barrier. Everybody there was personally offended by what that man had just done to us, what had he just taken from us. And so, to Lyric's point, I mean, if you are creative and and a crucial thinker, there's a lot of things that you can do with a lot of people. And I think that when we're talking about inclusivity, because I know even at this point, even saying diversity is like, oh, it's a buzzword, whatever. I always like to tell people inclusivity is good business at the end of the day. So we're talking about Swerve as world champion and oh, the perception of this, that, and a third. Regardless, I think to your point, Jesse, he is being presented as mostly himself and a mostly authentic, played up version for TV of, of a real person, a real relatable person. Everybody that liked AEW is going to continue watching AEW, whether he's world champion or not. He has the opportunity to bring in people who were not watching AEW because they're going to look on TV and say, that's the champion. He's like me. That's the champion. He's like my boyfriend. He's like this, that, or a third, and so that relatability is something that will provide good business. And so I always think it's funny when we have these conversations. It's like, yeah, from a creative standpoint, it makes sense. Obviously, from a moral standpoint, is what we would all like to see is better representation and more inclusion, but also financially. You have the opportunity to break into new markets. You have the opportunity to expand your reach in almost every capacity. And especially AEW still as a younger company. A lot of people of color in particular, don't necessarily have that bad taste in their mouth that they might have for WWE, considering some of the things that they've done in the past in relation to race. So you do have an opportunity to build a much wider audience if you truly know how to tap into it. And I think that goes into my last point, which we talked about before. You need people behind the scenes that are able to capitalize on that. You need people behind the scenes that are able to make those connections, and to be a part of the audiences that you're trying to reach, and not just the people who are already watching.
I think that's a really good point, especially like think about like the Japanese audience. I remember when Okada signed to AEW and I went through the Japanese comments and like put the translate feature on, and I saw a lot of people say that, oh, I don't watch this, but I'm going to start seeing what they have going on because Okada's there, just because of like how much he meant to Japanese wrestling. And I've been monitoring the progress, and like, they've been putting his matches on New Japan World still, even though he's not no longer with New Japan. And a lot of fans are into it because guess what? People are more inclined to stay tuned in if he's retaining everything about him that made him special rather than going and becoming a completely different character Japanese caricature exactly and missing everywhere because people are able to connect with it because, oh, this is the same Okada that we've always known. Like, you know, this is the same Okada that we've always known. And we rarely get to see that. And I think like that's one of the things that I think that AEW can do and has an advantage to do of you can recruit the best talent from all over the world. And you can also allow them to maintain their presentation and not become caricatures of themselves. But at the same time, you also have to elevate them. Like, I think Collision is a great example. That Rey Fénix versus Beast Mortos match, if you walked away from that not believing that one of those guys should have a championship by the end of the year, I don't know what you were watching. You know, the talent is there, and clearly the audience is very, very hungry. You know, they're very, very hungry. People are so, I know certain people who don't particularly care for AEW, but when they seeing Willow become champion, they're like, wow, this is a whole different type of representation that I didn't even know that I needed, you know, of somebody. Because it, like you said, it just feels like a real person. And like when we get to eventually when Okada becomes world champion, which I do believe he does, he will. It's not going to feel, at least to anybody with any common sense, it's not going to feel like a diversity hire or a token hire. It's just going to feel like Okada has become a world champion and he just happens to be the first Japanese world champion. And I kind of feel like that was Swerve too, of just, it wasn't the entire conversation. Like, yes, this is a part of it, but the overarching story was, I've been working hard for a very long time. I earned this. I beat all your faves. I went through all the top guys, and this is what I deserve, and this is what I've earned. And I think that it also goes back to what we've said about having people backstage. When you have people who are culturally aware and culturally sensitive, there are ways to frame diverse talent being uplifted without throwing their identities down everybody's throats and being like, yes, I am a Black, queer, Japanese, Hispanic, this, that, and the third. Like, it doesn't have to be like that. And another thing, and I've learned this from Danny, is that especially when you're formulating heel characters, being a hater is okay. You know, being a hater does not have to come with racism, sexism, any of those. You just got to be creative. And that's what we're seeing with Okada, of just, he's an asshole, but it's natural and it's creative. It has nothing to do with anybody's identities. And I think that's how things should be.
I think, Danny, to touch on your point in terms of like, is this good business? I think going back to looking at some of like the demographic data for AEW viewership, AEW, there is a segment of wrestling fans that AEW is not reaching, and a big percentage of that are Black fans. There are a lot more Black fans on a percentage basis. There's a much larger Black audience that watches WWE than there is AEW. It's probably a lot of reasons for that. I had Chris Seeley on in January to kind of talk about some of those potential reasons, but one of the key takeaways is there is a segment of wrestling fans that you are not reaching that you can reach. And we talk about how can AEW grow its fan base? How can AEW improve? How can AEW get a bigger TV deal? All this kind of stuff. Here's a really clear path to getting there, which is here is where we there's, you know, 20% of Black wrestling fans don't watch us. How can we do that? And obviously one of the key ways to do that is to push and promote Black talent. I wanted to ask, like, what did you guys think of how this past week was handled with Swerve in terms of giving him that big promo spot on Collision and not Dynamite, and having him have, you know, a big match on Collision and not Dynamite, in respective to how that worked out with the NBA game and kind of the amount of people that actually ended up watching Swerve? Because I don't know if you saw the data, but the ratings came out today, and I saw the first 10 minutes of Collision coming off of the NBA game did a 0.49 in the key demo, which is gigantic. So a lot of people saw Swerve. Now, were all those people huge AEW fans? I don't think so. But I found the strategy kind of interesting, that instead of putting him right on Dynamite like a lot of people expected. They instead held him off until Collision with kind of this game plan of putting him in front of an audience that maybe wasn't a bunch of huge AEW fans. But I'm kind of curious to what you thought over the past week, how that was handled.
For me personally, when it first happened, when he didn't do a promo on Dynamite, I kind of immediately figured it out. And I think I have a background in sport and entertainment. So like my degree is in sport and entertainment management. So like I immediately I was like, oh, so like the playoffs are going on, like, okay. And but I realized that a lot of other people might not think that way. Like my brain kind of like moves business minded. I'm not gonna lie, I think it was a good call just because one, when you look at what the Dynamite rating actually ended up being versus you looked at Collision and you see the lead in, like, it was a risk. It was a risk. And like, here's the thing, it almost went wrong because that Celtics Heat game ended a lot earlier than we expected. It than everybody expected, like they ended up running Collision about what 8:15. It was supposed to originally run at what 8:30, and like in the grand scheme of things, 15 minutes makes a huge
Yes.
difference when it
Thankfully,
comes.
it was a huge Celtics blowout. I'm from Boston, so this
Yes,
is an important distinction for me.
gross.
I'm a Heat fan, so like I will say, like the biggest loser in all of this was really me, but. I was actually the biggest loser in all of this, but I think, to be quite honest, I think a lot of people are rooting for Swerve to fail. A lot of people are rooting for AEW to fail, but especially like I said, there's a lot of people really wanting to be able, how do I say it? Because like you said, a lot of wrestling has always been synonymous with WWE. That's no secret. A lot of people are loyal to WWE, if that's no secret. A lot of people only see success as being WWE, if that's no secret. And I think some people want to be able to prove that, well, this is the best place to be if you're a black champion or something like that. And I think, I'm gonna be honest, some of the people's their minds will never be changed. And I do think, like, I genuinely do believe that some people just want to see him fail. Now, I will say, would there have been validity to him doing the opening promo on Dynamite? Absolutely. Dynamite at the end of the day is the flagship show. But in the midst of all these playoffs and stuff of being bumped for the NBA and NHL playoffs co consistently over the last couple of weeks, think about it. We had 3 hour rant Collision Rampage. We're about to have 3 hour Dynamite Rampage. Like, we have not known peace for weeks. But I do think it was the right call. And I do think that sometimes fans just jump the gun and are very reactionary and be like, oh my gosh, he doesn't have an opening promo on this one Dynamite, on this first Dynamite, the entire title run is a failure. That's insane.
Yeah, you're not
I
even
think,
joking. People say that,
no,
like,
they did, like, literally said it.
well, I'll be nice because this is your show. I don't want to isolate your audience, but we're a lot meaner over at Black
No,
Girl
whatever
Wrestling.
you're gonna say it. No, please feel free
No,
to say it.
it's
My
okay.
audience is very
I'm
mean.
working
They're
on
very,
respectability politics. No,
okay.
I'm kidding. So I think I always say, like, being honest, like, me and Tony Khan are not splitting the checks. I'm not getting paid regardless of how well the ratings are, regardless of how well ticket sales are going. So I as an individual, that's just not something that I pay particular attention to because I don't care. It doesn't really make a difference in my day-to-day life. Overall, obviously, I want AEW to succeed because I like it. And so I want it to be a viable product that, makes money. And there's people that work there. I hope everybody makes money. Yay, capitalist. But I do think that the conversation itself about whether or not Swerve should make an appearance on Dynamite, he obviously had that match on Dynamite with Carl Fletcher and then the match on Collision and the promo. But it didn't sit all that well with me. I understand the logic behind it, but I also understand that when MJF was world champion, we saw that man whenever he was there. All right. And it could have been for half an hour, it could have been for a 30-minute segment. When MJF was world champion, there was no escaping the fact that MJF was world champion. And
Literally.
I don't necessarily think that that was a great thing. I definitely think that that was to the title reign's detriment at the end, or towards the end. But Samoa Joe to me felt like he was holding the title so that we could give it to Swerve. Swerve, I want it to feel like a genuine lengthy title reign, and I would love for that to have had a solid start with it. I think it did have a solid start, but I would have loved for that to start with a solid promo on Dynamite, and then you could have, honest to God, done the same thing on Collision, done almost the exact same thing. In considering all the other aspects that were going into the viewership numbers for that night. But I think it goes back to the thing I was saying earlier, like AEW fans are gonna watch AEW, you know. And so this conversation that we're having surrounding his treatment, I think, is in comparison or in relation to other AEW world champions, which is going to continue throughout his title reign. Being the first and being the only thus far, particularly when you are black, there are eyes on you and at all times, and now you're world champion. Of course there's gonna be eyes on you, so it's just an increase tenfold. But everything you do is going to be scrutinized at a higher level. Whether it's you as the talent, whether it's how you're booked. Everybody and their mama got an opinion on the world championship, and everybody and their mama got an opinion on black talent. You put those two together, everything's gonna be a think piece. And a lot of people have not thought their thoughts through before they write think pieces. But yeah, I mean, as a person sitting there watching it, I was like, I know how this usually works. You win the title, you come out here on Dynamite, and you say, I won the title. This is my championship reign. This is what I intend to do with it. You know, and he didn't have that on Dynamite. He had a match, which was good, but I don't know. I didn't love it on an individual basis. I understand the business decision behind it. Don't really care. I'm not a business girl. But as a fan, I hope that that doesn't have an impact on the way that we view this title run going forward, which I don't think it will, but I hope it doesn't, you know.
Yeah, AEW, in one of the, I've written about this before, but one of the key distinctions between AEW and WWE is WWE is very, very centered around like two or three big stars that have multiple segments per show, right? Obviously, you can tell with Cody. It's just like it's when Cody first jumped to WWE, it was like Cody had multiple segments per show. There was a countdown clock telling you when Cody was going to be on the show. It was very much like Cody is this huge star. And I think that's effective for WWE in terms of look at our giant stars, look at this. I think AEW fans enjoy the more collective and diverse approach to talent that gets featured. And MJF was the kind of the exception of MJF was really presented a similar way to I think WWE presents its top talent, which is multiple segments show each show. You know, MJF's wrestling multiple matches on pay-per-view. He's in a tag team. He's the world champion. It was very much a lot of MJF. And I do think that, like you said, Danny, I don't think that really helped him in the long run. I think it made his character get stale and people got bored of him faster than they would have otherwise. But at the same time, there's a balance you want to find behind. Is Swerve going to be, is he really, is he has the world title.
Is he the guy?
Yeah, being the world title doesn't necessarily mean you're going to be the top guy. It doesn't, in AEW, it feels a little bit more likely than in WWE, because in WWE, you could have the world title and you could be a total afterthought in some cases. But at least in AEW, it seems like that. But you're right. It would be like, kind of a warning sign. I used to have this test. It actually is still a very effective test for WWE, where I would say, if you're talking about somebody that they're allegedly trying to push, I would say, would they do this to John Cena? Would they put John Cena in this position? Would they beat up John Cena like this? Would they have him cut this kind of promo? Would they not have him do this? And if the answer is no, they wouldn't have John Cena do that, then they really weren't that sincere about pushing them. Like, well, if they didn't want John Cena, they wouldn't have John Cena lose like this, so they're not really that serious about him, because John Cena is kind of the gold standard of how hard they're willing to push someone to be their top guy. And with Swerve, you could use a similar thing with MJF, which is like if MJF won the title on a pay-per-view on Sunday, would he not, would he have been on Dynamite? And I think the answer is probably yes. So What does that say about Swerve? Again,
And
one
I
week.
think, oh, I'm sorry, I didn't mean
No,
to.
go ahead. Go ahead. I'm done.
I was gonna say, and I think that, I think that you also have to think about it, or at least I do on a personal level, in relation to the Osprey problem, which is that you have Will Ospreay, who's arguably the best wrestler in the world, sort of looming in the background of Swerve's now title reign. And there's questions surrounding the length of Swerve's title reign. Is he going to fight Ospreay at All In and drop that belt in a relatively short amount of time? And I think that having the opportunity to come out here on Dynamite in an opening segment to make a declaration of what you intend your title reign to be may have helped you solidify sort of that ceiling as a, or that feeling as a top guy while Ospreay's still out there, if that makes sense. Because you coming out here and working a match, it's great that we get to see you. Do you feel like the top guy? Not that night. Yes, on Collision, absolutely, on Collision, when you were given the opportunity to cut that promo and then to have that match with Claudio. But I do think, it, people talk about, oh, like the length of Swerve's title reign. I do think it's gonna be an interesting, sort of thing that happens. And I think that Swerve is going to have to his credit, has done an amazing job at earning every single thing that he's gotten in AEW. And I think he's going to continue to prove himself as an absolutely not just deserving champion, but a good one. A great one, even if given the opportunity. But you do have in a world like AEW, in a roster so stacked, and that man in particular, that threat sort of looming over you of just to take that spot away. And I think that wanting to make sure that Swerve gets the top level top guy treatment as the first and only so far Black World Champion, I would have loved for him to at least have that first moment of putting the stamp on it. This is who we're getting behind, on the Wednesday Dynamite.
I think that that's completely fair, and I think that, like, there, how do I say it? Like, from a business perspective, I get it. Like, I get it. Like, you get more eyes from the NBA playoff lead in, and then let's just be honest. There is a big difference between MJF and Swerve, and Swerve is not the best talker. Of just like, I can understand not opening Dynamite, I guess, with the talking segment. But the thing is, if you're gonna do it anyway. I don't see why he couldn't have picked up the mic like after the match. I think like that would like, like at least like address the crowd. And I think also too, setting is important. You're the first Black World Champion. It's the first show after Dynasty, and you're in Daily's place. You're in the home of AEW. Like this is, I think like it would be different. Maybe if it was a different venue, some random venue across America, but this is Daily's place. Like this is the home of All Elite Wrestling. I do think like putting a mic in his hands, or shit, even putting the mic in Nana's hands or something. I don't know. Like I do think that that could have 100% be handled better. And I do think like okay, maybe a part of Dynamite is before they let Swerve speak. They wanted to, how do I say, minimize or maybe get rid of the Osprey problem because, like, it was decided in the Gauntlet match that Osprey is obviously going to be the next contender for the international title. So who knows? There might not even be a Swerve Osprey match at All In Wembley, which I think is a good idea, in my opinion. But I digress. I think
Yeah.
you hold that.
I
And
think
so
that's I think that's huge. Like I think Ospreay's gonna win the title at Wembley, and I would assume that Swerve is still a champion at the time. And I mean, would it mean that Swerve would be not have like would have a 4 month title reign, which by AEW standards is relatively short. It's about the same length as Samoa Joe's title reign. But at the same time, the payoff is he's going to main event a major stadium show. The build, as you know, there's plenty of opportunity to have an awesome build to that where these two guys can have this incredible rivalry. And then they're probably going to have like one of the best matches of the year. So I don't think that's a bad way. Like, even though it's maybe shorter than people think, like he's gonna main event a giant stadium show with an amazing wrestler and have like a legendary wrestling match, I don't think is a bad way for his title reign to end, because ultimately Swerve's trajectory in AEW is not going to be defined by this title reign. It's gonna be the next 5 years of what it's like, what his career is like. And losing to Ospreay at Wembley, I don't think is a bad way to take him to that next step if he is going to be you know, what he's going to do after he drops the title. One thing I want to float out to you,
Can I say something really quickly? Can I
yeah,
say
sure.
something really quick? I think that I don't want Ospreay to face Swerve All In. I'm not gonna lie. Like, I don't. I don't. I think that when you have talent locked in the multi-year deals, there's no need to rush it. I think that there's a lot of validity in letting Will Ospreay win the singles titles in the company and work his way up to the world championship. I think that that international belt in his hands could be monumental, because I think if he takes that belt to Uganda, like a lot of us think that he's going to, I truly believe that it could change so much in wrestling. And I think, like, he's the perfect person to do it, considering the way that he put the British Indies on his back. I think that there's nobody better. And also, I think that Swerve needs something for himself. And I think there's something for himself. Like, I think, I'm gonna be honest, I think the And we're especially now that Ospreay's in the international title scene, I think we're heading towards Swerve Hangman 4 at Wembley, which also should probably Swerve should lose. But I think that there's a much he doesn't look like a failure if he loses to Hangman versus Ospreay. Because I think, and the reason why I say this is because it feels like, well, with the Ospreay thing, it almost feels like he's marching to his fate with this boogeyman in the background. And that's kind of like the feeling. And let's just be real. Let's look at the next pay-per-view lineup. Swerve isn't just competing with men. Swerve is competing with women, because 9 times out of 10, it looks like the main event of Double or Nothing is going to be Mercedes, which is, in my opinion, it should be. But what's the next pay-per-view after that? Forbidden Door. Okay. Maybe he main events that one, but maybe he doesn't, because Forbidden Door is just a whole nother can of worms. Remember, last year a title didn't even it wasn't even a title that main evented Forbidden Door. It was Okada Danielson. I mean, rightfully so. And so what is the next pay-per-view after that? All In. And so if he does have this short title reign, how many opportunities does he actually get to be the guy at the top of the card? And
Fair.
so, yeah, I'm a fan of keeping Ospreay out of, because at the end of the day is him and Wembley are inevitable. You don't have to rush this. Like, you don't have to rush this. He just got there. And also, like, Swerve has to be able to carve something for himself. And Mercedes is a very legitimate challenger, and this is somebody who he can't even wrestle.
I wanted to float this idea for talk about like what Swerve's gonna do. They are going to, they're clearly doing, I think, setting up some sort of the Elite versus like the heart of AEW feud. It's I imagine it's going to be eventually lead to Blood and Guts. What do we think of Swerve as being kind of like the leader for like Team AEW? Now he'll be the world champion, so it kind of now he could also like maybe feud with Okada over the world title or something like that. Or but I was thinking about that, like we're going to need. There's going to be like, who are the baby faces that are going to step up and defend AEW from the Elite? What feels like this major angle that they're doing. And that would be kind of I think, an interesting way to position Swerve as like the top baby face in the entire company, as being like the heart and soul of AEW, as he leads this team of other guys against the Elite in what has the potential to be the hottest angle in the entire company. Now he's got the world
Yeah.
title. I think that's an interesting idea. I don't know if they'll do it. He's got the world title. He could do something else and they can use that spot for somebody else. But I do think if we're talking about like how to position Swerve as something bigger than just a guy who has a title, I think that's an interesting idea.
Yeah, I mean, I think that, well, like it or not, the elite have been used as and continue to be the measuring stick in AEW. The Elite, Danielson, and a few others. So it's like, okay, that's when you know. And in particular, I would say a lot of times that it's Kenny Omega in particular, but obviously with him out, things shift a little bit. But I think the idea of Swerve and other AEW talents or homegrowns or whatever you want to say, trying to defend AEW's honor against the elite provides for a lot of opportunity of what we were talking about earlier. A lot of these guys are supposed to be next up. A lot of these guys that are supposed to be, that are working their asses off, but are saying that it's people like you, the elite, booking themselves into, into success and taking advantage of all this stuff, that is that barrier and that is holding them back. And so I think that, and I said this on our podcast, I think that that provides a big opportunity for growth, not just for Swerve, but for a myriad of other talents. And Swerve, we're talking about having conversations about him being the top guy, being treated as the top guy. The top guy status in AEW is someone who has the belt and has beaten Kenny Omega. That is kind of, you kind of have to do both. Otherwise, he's someone that the conversation always seems to come back to. In the same way that, where we're talking about Ospreay now, like, Swerve is the champion. Ospreay doesn't have any titles. We shouldn't, in theory, be talking about him, but he is undeniable. He is no doubtedly one of the best in the world. And so the conversation will come back to him. So it's a matter of how do you get Swerve, who is our guy now, as a bigger conversation piece than someone who gets all of that without the title, if that makes sense. So while we can't give him the moment to go over Kenny right now, we can have him dismantle the elite and, go through them and defeat them in every way possible in tags and trios and, in blood and guts. Because again, they're people, it's good to see them win. It makes sense when they win. They don't need to, they don't need to. But yeah, I mean, I really do like the idea. I think it has. It could go a long way, and I hope that that's where they go with it, and I hope that Swerve is involved because outside of the Hangman storyline, I don't exactly know where you go with Swerve's title reign. I don't know that we've necessarily planted a whole lot of seeds for him as champion thus far. And obviously that can change, and he just got the belt, but I think that I just mean that there's room for opportunity, and that could be one of them.
Yeah, I think coming off a collision, when you look at the framing and Swerve's opening promo, and now that I think about it, maybe that was why also they held off because much of Swerve's opening promo was about the elite. It was about, he called it a bitch move. He said that Tony Khan put, everything in his hands, trusted him. He sees him as this, that, the third. And so heading into next week, I expect him to be put into a position where he is potentially like, the leader of this brigade to against the elite. And I think the framing of that Collision Rampage double episode was very interesting. We opened the show with Swerve essentially being like, I am AEW, and we closed the show with Daniel Garcia essentially doing a little bit of the same thing. And I've said this on Twitter, like, I mean, would it be nice for Swerve to have a world championship defense at Double or Nothing? Yes, I think like there's some legs to that. I think that I would love it to be like Christian Cage or somebody, or maybe even a Jack Perry, but I think it's too early for Jack Perry to take a loss right now. But I think that there is a lot of validity in also putting Swerve and Anarchy in the arena. The Elite versus AEW and Anarchy of in the arena would solve a lot of problems. It puts Swerve as the leader of a team in the hottest angle in AEW. And also it protects him from not being having to defend the world title at Double or Nothing, which makes it much easier for Mercedes to main and Willow to main event without it being considered, oh my gosh, this takes away from Swerve's moment. So I think that there is a lot of legs to it. And I'm interested to see how it plays out. Obviously, we're going to find out this week who won. Who he's supposedly going to face at Double or Nothing. And then two, Tony Khan has said we're going to find out who's in charge, quote unquote, in his absence, which, and then three, Kenny Omega is returning. So you do the math on what those three things mean.
I think it's the anonymous Raw. I think the anonymous Raw general manager has come back to run AEW.
Hopefully.
I'm not gonna lie, those are the dark days. Do y'all remember when Raw was ran by a computer? Like, those were truly the dark times.
All right. So we're gonna wrap up there. Do y'all want to plug anything, Danny? I'll let you go first. Where can people find you?
So why did I just forget everything that I do? You can follow me on Twitter and on Instagram at Danny Don't Miss. That's a lie, not Instagram, just Twitter at Danny Don't Miss. And you can follow at Black Girl Wrestling on Twitter, Instagram, and TikTok. And you can watch me and Lyric do the Dynamite book, a review that we do every week after Dynamite, where we tell everyone the truth when everybody else will lie to you.
Exactly. You can find me on the Twitters and the Instagrams at Lyric Wrestling. And you can subscribe on YouTube at Lyric Swinton, just my first and last name. And if you look in the link in my bio on anything, you will be able to find this new article I just dropped, which is about the long-term impact of Okada, Danielson, Omega, and Ospreay. That's fun. And yes, I also co-host the Dynamite book. And I'm not sure how we're going to do it this week, if we do it this week, because it is that double taping. So it's Dynamite Rampage this week. So,
well, Kenny Omega's going to be there, so we have to have a show.
Yeah, we do have to talk. So it's going to be like, it's going to be later this week, but we'll be there.
All right. I want to thank Danny and Lyric so much for joining the show. I want to thank everyone who listens to the show every week. I want to thank all the positive feedback I got from my AEW fan survey that I ran over the past few weeks. We got a ton of data. You can check out the results over at voicesofwrestling.com. I did a whole article kind of writing about what some of the results were shown. But you can check that out when you get a chance. And thanks again, and I'll talk to you again after a while. Hey everybody, my name is Jesse Collings, and I want to tell you all about my show, the Gentleman's Wrestling Podcast, here on the Voices of Wrestling Podcast Network. On the Gentleman's Wrestling Podcast, we do a thorough analysis on the biggest issues and trends within the pro wrestling industry. We talk a lot about pro wrestling media, we talk a lot about fan culture and wrestling's place within general pop culture, and we talk about the broader influences that are shaping the way we discuss and analyze the pro wrestling industry. We've had some of the brightest minds in the pro wrestling intelligentsia on the show, including WrestleNomics host Brandon Thurston, both Rich Kreich and Joe Lanza from the Flagship Wrestling Podcast, Trevor Dame from the Through the Years podcast, and a whole lot more. This isn't a show for hot takes. It's not a show recapping the latest episode of television. This is a show focusing on the biggest topics in pro wrestling and doing a deep dive on the real stories behind the surface level analysis you might find elsewhere. The Gentleman's Wrestling Podcast is available wherever you get your podcasts, and we'd really appreciate it if you gave us a try. Thanks.